Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. Two matches, of course, going on the other side of the world at the moment, New Zealand, England in Hamilton, and a very interesting game in Adelaide where some records have been broken in the Australia-Pakistan day-night match. Just before we get into that, just to say the Cricketer magazine special offer, don't forget that. If you're thinking about Christmas presents, A, buying a Cricketer magazine subscription is a useful Christmas present, but also if you go for a subscription this month, it costs about 40 quid, but for that you get a John Lewis £20 gift voucher or a copy of Alistair Cook's autobiography. You go to www.thecricketer.com/Christmas, and that special offer is there. So look out for it. Simon Mann, you're in Hamilton. I mean, England sort of getting into this game a bit better after 2 days. Not as much of kind of leather chasing as in Mount Maunganui, but then losing two late wickets in the day.
Yeah, well, there couldn't be any more leather chasing, surely, than in Mount Maunganui. 201 overs in the dirt for England there, 130 overs here. They really stuck at it, I think. Credit to England, they really stuck at it. The pitch is still good. I can totally understand their decision to bowl first. They wanted to try to exploit the grass on the pitch and the early conditions. They always knew it was going to be tough. It wasn't going to be a 150 all-out, 200 all-out sort of pitch. They knew that, and both sides knew that as well. It was just that the stats in New Zealand say you generally bowl first, the pitch gets better for batting as the match goes on, and now England have to make that happen. Now, they've lost a couple of early wickets. They did well to finish off the New Zealand innings, the last five wickets going down for 60, but it was very hard work again, and they lost a couple of wickets to Sibley's shot. Wasn't a great one, really. It was a ball you think he should have knocked away for runs. It was a ball on leg stump, which he missed, trying to clip it through mid-wicket. And then Denley nicked a ball on off stump through to the keeper. So disappointing end of the day for England. They stuck at it with the ball, and they worked really hard. And, I think today, 200 for 7 in 70 overs, in a way, you couldn't have asked much more than that.
And Stuart Broad took a few wickets. I noticed quite a lot of short balls, and Archer finally getting a couple late on as well. How do you assess England's bowling on a second flat pitch in a row?
Well, it was really hard for them. They had to work extremely hard, and there was a passage in the afternoon where it was 53 overs without a wicket. They did not take a wicket from 7 minutes past 11 till half past 3, 25 to 4. It felt like same old, BJ Watling digging in, blocking mainly and just picking off the odd bad ball. I mean, it was not a thing of beauty, really. It was hard work for everyone that was there. I think, for Watling himself, England's bowlers, fielders, spectators, commentators. You know, it was not that entertaining. But Stuart Broad just found something before tea. And what he did was he actually bowled from a yard further back. And it just surprised Watling. It bounced a bit, took the shoulder of the bat, and he was caught in the gully. And from there, England began to make progress. Broad got another wicket with a short ball that was pulled down to Archer on the fine leg boundary. Archer took a wicket with a short ball. Actually, the short balls worked for England. Wokes bowled a ball that took the glove of Tim Southee, and he was caught behind. There was a fortunate wicket at the end where Wagner just clipped a low full toss to mid-wicket. England finally got a bit of good fortune. It's not easy out here. You know, it's the Kookaburra ball. The pitches are flat. And as matches tend to go on in New Zealand, you know, the scores actually increase in the second and third innings. And that's what England are banking on. Whether it'll happen or not, they're under a bit of pressure now, but someone's going to have to come out on the third day and play a big innings, basically. Someone like Joe Root, Ben Stokes, someone's going to have to get, not just 100, because Latham got 100 and they only got 375 in New Zealand. Someone's going to have to get 150, 180, something like that, if England are to have a chance of winning
this
game.
There is a stat, actually, which came out of the Australia match, that the figure of 376 more or less guarantees you're not going to lose a test match. Apparently, anything above 376, and you tend to win a lot more test matches than you lose in the first innings. So New Zealand were spot on there. It's interesting, isn't it? You say that Stuart Broad bowled one there from a 23 yards, sort of behind the crease kind of thing. I just think there's a lot lacking in ingenuity from bowlers generally. I mean, I've been watching the Australia-Pakistan game, Pakistan in the field for five sessions at least. And, you know, just leather chasing again all the time, only took three wickets in that time. And some of these bowlers, they're young and fairly inexperienced, but they show quite a lot of changes of pace and different styles when they're playing white ball cricket. But when they're playing a test match, you don't see any of that. You don't see Yorkers, you don't see slower balls, back of the handers, slower ball bouncers, things like that. You just don't see any of that, or indeed a 23-yarder. It's odd, isn't it, that the players can't... You know, batsmen have converted many of the skills from T20 into test cricket, which is where, you know, Stokes was able to play that amazing innings at Headingley, for instance. But bowlers don't seem to have done that.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point. I mean, Stuart Broad was saying after today's play, you know, they sort of had to find different ways of taking wickets, trying different things. You know, one of the tactics was to bowl short with men back, and we've seen that quite a bit in the series. Perhaps they went to it a bit quickly at the Bay Oval. You know, he said top of off stump out here just doesn't seem to work. You know, batsmen do not nick off, so you have to be creative as a bowler. I'm not quite sure why that is, actually, Yoz, why we don't see more of the white ball skills in test cricket. What's your theory on that?
Well, I don't know. Is it a mindset thing? You know, that the coaches sort of say, right, you know, top of off stump, hit the length, all that kind of bowl in the right areas kind of approach. That cliche I absolutely hate. And maybe bowlers are just so conditioned to bowling to that plan that they can't bring those white ball skills in. But, you know, when you've been bowling for a session and you haven't taken a wicket, surely it makes sense to try the kind of things that cause batsmen to mistime the ball. I mean, in this epic innings that David Warner played today, he played some reverse sweeps. He went outside leg stump and sort of sliced it over cover a couple of times. You know, even in a mammoth innings like that, there were elements of T20, but that never appeared when the bowlers were operating. I don't really understand it, actually. The Yorker is a ball that is almost sort of become defunct in test cricket, and yet obviously in one day cricket, if you haven't got a Yorker as a quick bowler anyway, you don't get a game. So I think it's a real area of concern, and bowlers on flat wickets need to use the crease better. You know, I mean, it was kind of it annoyed me slightly watching Pakistan playing against Australia. We saw the dominance of Stuart Broad round the wicket to David Warner in the Ashes, and yet the Pakistanis sort of largely refused to go round the wicket to start with against Warner in both test matches. Eventually they did try it, but I don't know what these coaches are doing, applying their bowlers' minds to a test match and maybe conditioning them to bowl in too regimented a way.
One thing, if you think about that, in white ball cricket, the batsman's got to come at you, hasn't he? Whereas in Test cricket, they can just sit in. I mean, with BJ Watling, for example, it's really difficult to find a strategy to dislodge him because he's not taking any risks. It's really no-frills cricket. The emphasis is on defence. But in T20, especially, batsmen are coming at you the whole time. 50-over cricket, increasingly, they're coming at you. So bowlers do have to mix it up a bit more. Whereas in Test cricket, you don't get that. So, you know, bowlers don't have to... The batsmen don't have to attack the bowlers. That, you know, that might be one reason why all those variations and don't feel quite so necessary. Of course, the other thing as well is in Test matches in England, the Duke's ball does enough for the bowlers, so you don't need all those variations. I suppose when you come abroad and when you play in New Zealand in particular, where the pitches are really flat, you know, then you realise how tough it is and how much more you need to improvise. And that one thing Stuart Broad actually was saying the other day was, you know, I was talking about the Kookaburra ball and pitches overseas. He said, well, you know, if you play in South Africa, for example, the Kookaburra ball is fine. You know, it can aid you. You get pace and bounce in South Africa. So it's, you know, different conditions challenge you in different ways, and is about adapting. And clearly, it's not been easy for England here, and clearly it's been so hard for Pakistan in Australia. But Australia at home, I mean, you know, that's one of the toughest places to win, isn't it? And, you know, India away, Australia away, perhaps even England away as well. You know, those are really hard conditions to win, and they're alien conditions. And sometimes, well, often in sport, you know, the better team wins. You can almost try everything. You can try all sorts of tactics, and the better team will come out on top. One question, burning question I have for you from Hamilton is, I haven't been watching the Australia game here, I haven't had the pictures, is why did Tim Payne declare on David Warner on 335 from a distance? It looked like the world record was on. Brian Lara might have been getting a bit fidgety looking on. I was there when he broke his world record in Antigua. Of course, the big bonus he had then was that he was the captain, so he chose when to declare, whereas Tim Payne declared on David Warner. Explain yours.
I will do after a short break. Yeah, well, I've been watching the Pakistan-Australia game for 2 days in Adelaide, and you asked about Tim Payne and why he declared on David Warner on 335. I think, actually, that it was largely to win the game. The evening shadows were lengthening. The time to bowl, theoretically, in these day-night games is twilight. And he thought, well, we've got enough runs. We've got 589. And, you know, Warner will take another, you know, 45 minutes if he gets there to get to 400. The main thing is about winning the game. The forecast for the next day and a half isn't great. And particularly they wanted to bowl in twilight today and then, you know, make inroads into the Pakistan batting. Maybe then go and bat themselves on the third day and then bowl in twilight again. So that was the overall theory that Tim Payne applied. I mean, it's an amazing thing to watch, actually, the way that David Warner, I was going to say ground out 335, but he didn't, actually. It was incredibly fluent, his innings. In fact, I looked up his strike rate compared to Lara in his 400, and it was a lot quicker. Warner was scoring at a rate of 80 per 100 balls, whereas Lara only at 68. And you think of Lara as being a very fluent, dashing sort of stylist, even in a long innings like that, but Warner was quicker. His stamina, because of a lot of the time, the running between the wickets was one of the features of his innings. The stamina he showed was incredible. The pushing for twos and threes, often running other people's runs, not just his own. Several times he had to jump three times into the air to celebrate milestones, 100, 200 and 300. And his leap got higher and higher each time, not just in the exaltation of what he'd achieved, but just in this sort of adrenaline that obviously was keeping him going. I thought it was quite sporting, actually, that the Australians did declare at that point. It was a forlorn experience for the Pakistanis bowling on that track. I mean, what sort of annoys me slightly is that teams do come to Australia without really preparing themselves properly, mentally or selectorally-wise, either. I mean, to pick debutant fast bowlers who've hardly played any first-class cricket, never mind Test cricket, just seems a total mistake. Yasir Shah averages 84 in Test cricket in Australia, and yet they're still banking on him as the fourth bowler. So they came into this game with Shaheen Afridi, who's an excellent prospect but has hardly any experience, Mohammed Abbas, who was dropped strangely for the first test, but doesn't really quite have the skills to make the ball move around in Australia. He relies too much on seam movement, isn't all that much pace. And then a debutant as the third seamer, Mohammed Musa, plus Yasir Shah, plus a couple of occasional spinners. Well, even top-line spinners struggle in Australia, never mind occasional spinners. So they did get their selections, their planning for this tour, completely wrong, Pakistan. But having said that, it was an amazing day of record-breaking, not just at David Warner's triple hundred, which was the first triple hundred ever made at the Adelaide Oval in a test match, overtaking the great Don Bradman's 299 not out. Also, it was the second highest score ever made by an Australian, so Warner overtook the 334 made both by Bradman and then Mark Taylor. So he was second only in the end. He's second only in the end to Matthew Hayden's 380 against Zimbabwe. And actually, it was quite nice that Mark Taylor was there at the ground, applauded Warner when he went past his own score. It's a nice story, actually, the Taylor one, because he got to 334 and knew it was Bradman's highest score, so didn't want to go past it, so declared on himself, actually, about, 15 years ago or so. And then it was Matthew Hayden who ruined that by then going past both of them and posting Australia's highest ever individual score. So Warner's now in second place. I think it was the right decision. And sorry, talking of records, also today, Steve Smith, who has played only a sort of small role in the match, got to 36 before a wild slog cost him his wicket. But he has become the fastest ever to 7,000 test runs. And I've got the list of batsmen here that made 7,000 test runs in speedy time. He's 10 tests quicker than Wally Hammond or Virender Sehwag, 15 tests quicker than Sachin Tendulkar, 9 tests quicker than Garfield Sobers, 24 tests quicker than Viv Richards, getting to 7,000 test runs. So an amazing performance by Steve Smith in such a short space of time to get past the 7,000 runs. Of course, the one guy he can't eclipse in terms of scoring rate is Bradman himself, who's not on that 7,000 run list because he fell 4 runs short.
It's been great at Pakistan, because they've actually found a way, haven't they, really, of limiting Smith in this series. And basically, the way they've found of doing it is just not letting him bat. You know, they don't take enough wickets to get him in.
Yeah, the key to getting Smith out is only allow him in at 350 for 2, and then he doesn't know what to do. He's so sort of overstimulated and almost exhausted by watching the game and kind of thinking about his innings for several hours that by the time he gets out there, he's completely spent.
Yes, a bit different from Stuart Broad nipping out David Warner in Warner averaging 9. It's been a remarkable transformation, and not surprising, I have to say. Warner in Australia, he averages about 61. Elsewhere, you know, much, much lower. The gulf is enormous between home and away with Warner. Just on the record, though, Yoz, was there a sort of a sense in the crowd? Were people getting excited that, you know, that a world record could be on, or did they sense a declaration was coming?
Good question. Shane Warne was getting very excited on commentary, talking about the 400 constantly from the stage when Warne was about 270. He said, the 400's in danger here, when Warne was about 270. But I think with the crowd, they were just enjoying Warner's rehabilitation. I mean, it is an amazing story of redemption, isn't it, really? Not only from the Ashes, where he averaged 9, but of course from the Sandpapergate scandal as well of 18 months ago, a man in disgrace. And actually, if you look at his scores since he came back into the side this summer in Australia, they've played 6 T20s and 2 test matches, and Warner has scored, and I just added it up actually, he's scored 776 runs in those T20 games and the 2 test matches, and he's been dismissed twice. So his average in this summer of international cricket in Australia is 338. I think it's just incredible, isn't it?
Absolutely phenomenal. In a way, no surprise. I mean, well, those huge numbers are a bit of a surprise because you can never predict that. But he's just such an effective player in Australian conditions. He really is. And England would be hoping that by the time they get there in, what, 2.5 years' time, whatever it is, or 3 years' time for the next Ashes series, that he'll be a bit over the hill and, you know, his career might be in a dip, because if he's not, him and Smith and Labuschagne, whoever else they discover, it's going to be very tough for them, despite that sort of 3-year plan they've got to try to win back the Ashes. I mean, I was there when Lara, just as a quick story actually about, you mentioned Matthew Hayden, when Lara broke the record. I've sort of told this story before, but it's always worth retelling. I remember doing an interview for an Australian television station in Queensland after Lara had broken the record. One of the journalists there said to me, "Do you know if Matthew Hayden has spoken to Brian Lara yet?" And I said, "Well, I, you know, absolutely don't know, because you know, Lara's been wrapped up in breaking the record and then being out in the field, because obviously they declared." And then on the mobile phone I was using about an hour or so later, 2 hours later, it rang, and there was an Australian voice on the end of the phone, and it said, "You know, this is Matthew. G'day, this is Matthew Hayden." And I didn't believe him. I thought it was someone, you know, pulling my leg, and I put the phone down on him. And of course, he rang back, and eventually, at the end of the play, I actually took the phone that Matthew Hayden was phoning on, gave it to Brian Lara in the West Indies dressing room. Went into the West Indies dressing room. Viv Richards, who was the coach, then invited me in and spoke to Brian Lara and gave him the phone, and he sat down and had a chat with Matthew Hayden, who congratulated him. But it was close to a situation where I gave Matthew Hayden the bum's rush, because I just simply didn't believe he was on the other end of the phone.
Obviously, lots of enthusiasm still for Test cricket in Australia. A big crowd today in Adelaide, round about 35,000, even though it's a bit of a one-sided match and a one-sided series. How about the feelings about Test cricket in New Zealand? You know, I worry about tests generally. I mean, firstly, it annoys me that the test series in New Zealand isn't counting in the World Test Championship. Secondly, it annoys me that these series are two test series. I mean, I think two test series should be banned. I think they're absolutely ludicrous. And you know, what is the enthusiasm for test cricket like in New Zealand from your recent experience?
Yeah, I mean, the crowds out here have been quite good. I mean, Mount Maunganui for the first test match, the crowds were, I think, pretty good for, you know, for New Zealand. I mean, it's not a huge population here for a start, and rugby is king out here. But I just sense that New Zealand doing well in the World Cup has lifted interest. I don't think you're ever going to get huge crowds, but playing on grounds where the grassy banks, it's not stadiums, has brought people out. The T20 series was well supported, apart from in Wellington, which actually, you know, a crowd in that stadium in Wellington rather rattles around. Crowds in the Bay Oval in Mount Maunganui were very good for 5 days. It helps, of course, that lots of England supporters have come out here, and you know, that gives it a really good atmosphere, and that, you know, the crowds here have been reasonable. I don't think you're going to have people queuing around the block necessarily to get into grounds in New Zealand.
But the profile, I mean, you know, media coverage, what's that been like?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's on Sky Television here. It's on ball by ball coverage on the radio. It's in the newspaper. I always feel that a tour of New Zealand always feels, I think, more low key than perhaps any other tour. But the West Indies now, actually, I feel when you go to the West Indies, the interest isn't quite there for the cricket. White ball, yes, a little bit. T20, yes, but test matches, no. But, you know, the thing is, of course, lots of England supporters go to watch in the West Indies. But I always feel that, yeah, a tour of New Zealand is quite low-key. And I think they accept that, you know, they build from a relatively low base. They've done extraordinarily well, actually, from in terms of, you know, the number of players that play and the level that they've achieved. You know, they really have. When you consider that, for example, 1946 and 1973, Australia didn't play them, and gradually, in my lifetime, they, as a team, they built and built and built, so that they are, you know, really competitive. They're number two in the ICC Test rankings at the moment, and of course, they reached the World Cup final. They're a really competitive side, and you know, someone like Daryl Mitchell came in today. No Colin de Grandhomme, he's injured. Daryl Mitchell comes in, 73 on his debut. You know, mature cricketer, 28 years of age, slotted in, played very well. You know, they're a really competitive side. I don't think they're ever going to have huge crowds, except perhaps, you know, for the really big matches. And I was there at Eden Park when the World Cup semi-final 2015, huge crowd. You know, that is the sort of occasion that's going to get everyone's juices flowing out here. But test match, you know, goodish crowds, but not that sort of bursting at the seams crowds. You see in England, for example.
Because it's good to see the Australians really supporting it, and actually also to see the players so up for it as well. Warner clearly really exultant after that landmark that he achieved today. Remember, he's a guy that came through the T20 system and has now made 24 test hundreds and the triple hundred that is now the feather in his cap kind of thing. And a younger player like Marnus Labuschagne, who made a maiden 100 in that first test at the Gabba, followed it up with another 100 here. Very, very accomplished innings as well, batting at number 3. And interestingly, you know, clearly a young guy really focused on playing the long format, even though he's got the skills to play the shorter format. And apparently he practices quite a lot by using a surfboard to bounce balls off with his mates. They skim balls off a surfboard and you have to sort of fend them off. Presumably this is a tennis ball rather than a hard ball. But it's just good to hear that there are players using their imagination to try and hone their skills for the longer format.
Yeah, I mean, you think, well, Don Bradman, what was it, famously used to hit...
Stump and a golf ball.
Stump
and
a golf
water
ball,
tank.
Yeah. Well, it sharpens up your hand-eye coordination, doesn't it? And Labuschagne's an interesting one, isn't it? You wonder with Labuschagne what would have happened if Jofra Archer hadn't hit Steve Smith during the Lords Test match. When he would have got a chance, whether he would have got a chance during the Ashes series. He might not have done. He was on the sidelines until that game and then suddenly came in, did well, and then he has not looked back since.
No, in fact, he is the leading test run scorer in 2019, amazingly. He's got over 800 runs, overtaken Steve Smith now. So really someone to look out for in the future, and just a very, very determined character. The Adelaide Oval has been populated today, by the way, by lots of people dressed in the Richie Beno cream blazer and grey wig, with their foam microphones, Channel 9 microphones. It's been Richie Day. It's Richie Day at almost every test ground in Australia now, one of the days. And you get about 200 of them all dressed as Richie Beno. So fantastic to see. What a great man. What a huge loss he has been to the world of cricket and the world of commentary. OK, well, that's it for today. We'll look back at the remainder of these test matches in the next couple of days. Thanks for listening.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.